It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome to The Car Doctor Show. This is The Car Doctor, Kevin Raywinkle, along with Tom Claxton. You have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. Show is brought to you by UJ Chevrolet, Mobile's oldest GM dealer, Alabama Pipe and Supply, and Ed's Seafood Shed.
Fantabulous Seafood Shed. Yeah. And I went over there Friday night, took my sister and her husband for his birthday, and we got in there, and they must have been 75 people. And I'm going like, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. And the girl, the little manager come by and says, don't you say nothing about it's Seafood Shed no more. We got too much business. I said, I don't believe the boss is going to agree with that.
I don't think he's going to agree
with
that.
But you know what? Within about 20 minutes, they had all of that squared away. I'm going like, what? How did y'all do that?
Did she give you permission to say that out loud? She's not in trouble now, is she?
I ain't going to say who said it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
One of them.
One of the girls said, Mr. Tom, you got too much business coming in over here.
That's right.
But there's a reason for that, and that's the great food and service.
It is, and it's unbelievable, man. We had a little toddy for our body, adult beverages and some fantabulous grilled shrimp and some of those greens that they have there.
Mm-mm-mm.
You're talking about melting
your mouth.
Are
they still open right now?
Yeah. Let's go. Okay. Let's go, Charlie. Let's hurry up. Wherever we get through this show, we'll get over there before they close.
The next 50 minutes of silence brought to you by Ed's.
Brought to you by Ed's. If you want to know what's going on, follow us to Ed's. Unbelievable. They got good food, they're good people, and they do a great job, so what can I say?
And they support veterans.
And they are, ways. 15% discount, man. Who else does that? 15% discount to veterans and first responders.
Yep.
You know, all of us. And thank God they recognize our first responders. Let me tell you something. I'm a jarhead Marine, and I wouldn't want to be on the police force. I wouldn't even want to be a fireman.
No.
You know? Because you don't know, you don't walk around a corner and somebody's standing there with a gun in your face or something,
Right.
Well, at least, when we was overseas, I wouldn't be prepared for it because I had one out too, And it probably the barrel.
You're that guy that someone's walking around the corner seeing.
Right, yeah. And that barrel was probably still warm from those rounds I was firing.
Right. I tell you. It's a tough job and tough life, but appreciate everybody that goes down that road and takes care of us.
Hey, a lot of people bitch about the police and they bitch about the firemen, but who in the hell are you gonna call when you get in trouble?
Right.
You're not gonna call Leroy down the street, man. You got to call the fuzz, baby.
Well, it's amazing that the people you see that complain about them the most are the first ones to pick up the phone. Yeah, when they get in trouble.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. That's kind of like that stupid Marine show, when that Navy guy was talking to that old colonel down in Guantanamo. He says, you want me on that wall. You want me on that fence,
Right. Right.
You don't want to have to worry about anything if I'm up there.
That's right.
My people are up there. Let's fix some cars. Woo!
Yeah. Give us a call. Yeah, I'm sure y'all don't want to hear us just sitting here.
No, you don't want to hear us keep running our dang job.
Well, can I start off with a major personal car question?
Charlie, you do not have a personal car question.
Yes, I do.
Charlie,
the car that we have is one of those that uses a fob, and you push the button instead of putting a key in the lock.
Right.
And it has gotten, at the worst possible times, where it don't want to start.
Uh-oh.
So we went by the dealer on our way to Birmingham this weekend, and I think that's for you, Tom.
I believe it is.
Anyhow, and so we go by the dealer and change the battery out in the fob, thinking, okay, it's been a while, and it's probably overdue, and it still might have been. Went out in the parking lot, and it wouldn't crank.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know there's some things that keep a car from starting with those kind of starters, or maybe any kind of starter. One is whether it's in neutral or park. Is that right?
Yeah, that's one of the things.
And
course.
The other
and that's
thing,
the same with any car.
But yeah. To shift into those gears from park, doesn't your steering wheel have to be just right?
No, not necessarily. It's it will always go to park regardless of where the steering wheel is. The steering lock may just not lock until you turn the wheel somewhere.
But it's been it starts just fine for maybe 15 or 20 times, and then every once in a while, it's just like it's deader than a doornail, and you keep kind of fiddling with it, and eventually you'll get it to start again.
Does it give you any messages on the dash saying no fob recognized?
It has done that. That's why we got the new battery. It says
right.
Can't see the fob, and mm-hmm. if the key was down in Marguerite's purse, down below the steering gear shift column,
yep.
It couldn't see the fob, and I understand all that because it's a very
right.
weak signal device.
Right, right. Well, you know, there's this really cool little thing they put in the car, and I think you've heard me talk about it before. It's called an owner's manual.
Okay? Uh-huh, I heard about that.
Yep. And,
I even tried to read mine.
If you go in there and you look up key,
uh-huh.
it will give you a spot to put that key. If the battery goes totally dead in that fob, it still is capable of sending out a weak signal for the receiver to tell it that the key is in there. But the key has to be in a very specific spot in the vehicle. I don't know where yours is in your car.
Right.
But your owner's manual will give you a place to put it. It'll be under that. When you look up key, it'll be under there where it says, it may even have a header that says no fob detected.
Mm-hmm.
It'll tell you where to put that fob at.
Okay, so when you get in the car, you put the fob there.
Well, if you can't get it to crank,
okay.
You put it there, and it'll get you where you need to go until you can get it fixed. You know?
Well, and of course, my concern is that, my wife might be off somewhere by herself and just can't get it to start.
Right.
And sometimes, depending on where you are, that might not be the safest place to be.
Yeah, exactly. And you probably also need to know, do you have a keyhole in your door for a manual key?
Yeah.
It
yes,
does?
We do.
Okay. Some cars, all cars have one. A lot of cars nowadays, they're covered up where you can't see them.
I'm going to have to look now that you brought that up, because I don't think we've ever had to use it.
Right. And this is a conversation I just had with my wife about her Equinox less than a week ago.
Yeah.
We happened to be in my truck. We were riding around, and I don't remember what brought it up, but I said, you just take your key, your dummy key out of your key fob, and open the door with it.
It's a little small, tiny key.
Well, it's a little pop out piece comes out of the top of the fob.
Yeah.
And she said, I don't have one of those. I said, yes, you do. I said, I don't believe you.
Let me see your fob. Show it.
See,
to
and that's all the key you get. It's just a little L shaped piece, and it's
like, and that just pulled out of the fob.
It pulled out of the top of the fob. And it's basically just hides in your fob, and it's the part that's actually tied to the key ring.
So I would suggest to all of our listeners that by tomorrow morning, go find the key in your fob.
Well, if you have a fob type, passive keyless entry car, something you just got to have the remote in your pocket.
Uh huh.
You do need to know these things because the battery may die on your car.
Sure.
The battery may die in your key fob. There may be interference somewhere in the area because this is nothing but a radio transmitter. Yeah.
Yep.
Radio interference will keep it from working.
Yeah.
And
if you got it in your purse right beside your cell phone, it seems like that can cause a problem.
And high intensity fluorescent lights can cause problems with it.
Wow.
There's a lot of things that can...
But your cell phone is transmitting all the time. That's how they know where you are.
Exactly. Well, it's got to know how to what you're saying, because it's listening to you all the time anyway.
Sure.
So, yeah. We had that conversation the other day, too. But the basically, you just need to figure out where that blank key is and how to pop the cover off of the door handle to get to your your manual entry.
I think we're going to have a lesson right after the show.
Exactly. You know, and it's just something you really need to know, because, you know, if you have your owner's manual where it's supposed to be in a glove box, and you're outside the car, that's going to be a little tough time to try and figure this out.
That's true.
So it's something you do need to know ahead of time. Your salesperson should tell you that. I don't think they all do, because apparently we didn't do it when we delivered the car to my wife either.
No, they didn't tell us either.
So anyway, we're going to take a break and let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back.
Well, I left Kentucky back in 49 and went to Detroit working on assembly line. The first year they had me putting wheels on Cadillacs. Every day I'd watch them beauties roll by, and sometimes I'd hang my head and cry, 'cause I always wanted me one that was long and black. One day I devised myself a plan.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
Well, I left Kentucky back in.
And welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is The Car Doctor, Kevin Raywinkle, along with Tom Claxton. You have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106.
And Kevin, thank you for answering that.
I'm back.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. I mean, it's something that everybody really needs to know about their vehicle.
Yeah, because we're going to more and more keyless starters.
Well, and that's the thing is
everything we have here in the future will be keyless.
It's headed that way. I mean, really, some of our most basic trucks are the only thing that we have that still uses a key that you put in a cylinder and turn the crank.
So can you hotwire the push button starters?
You know,
is it a whole lot harder?
Everything can be gotten. If you have the right technology with
it. Now, let's don't give out any tips on how to hotwire it.
No, we're not going to do that.
No, but it's you have to remember, even an ignition cylinder that you put a key in nowadays, and it's been this way for probably 10 years, it's nothing but a sensor. You're turning a key, and it feels just like it always did.
Yeah.
But all you're doing is you're moving some low-voltage signals to a module that is telling the car to crank or not crank. So you're not actually making connection through that switch to send power straight to a starter, like you used to be.
All right. Can they make a diagnostic machine that will crank a vehicle?
I can't. Using the GM equipment,
right.
I can't start one.
We can't start one. Have you seen anything on the aftermarket that's got something like that?
I'm sure there's stuff out there. There's people that have been able to manipulate some things in vehicles by hacking into them. Most all of our cars now have what they call a gateway module. Makes it much more difficult because you have to get through all the security in that module, and it's like a firewall,
basically, for
a computer. It's something you got to get through before you can get to a module that also has security measures in it. So you've got to
open the door electronically before it will open the door to the access phase that will start the vehicle.
Yeah. And when I go to program a key, and I'll show people from time to time, the steps you have to go through, and people say, well, you can get the code off of my key by a receiver that you can copy it. Well, you're not 100% copying it. So even if I have two keys look just like whatever, its initial step is a 12-minute process. Then it goes into multiple steps where you have to turn the key off, you have to turn the key back on, you have to hold the button down on the start button, you have to do this, you have to do that.
So in reality, you're programming a key?
You're learning the key to the vehicle.
The sensor's in the key to
the
sophistication of the computer in the car.
Yeah. And it's, it makes you go through all those steps, like open and close the door and push and hold the start button for so long and do this and that.
Are you kidding me? All that to just fix a damn key where to crank the car?
The reasons they do that is so they know whoever is programming that key is sitting in that car. They're not sitting somewhere down the road.
Oh, okay, or a car next door to it.
Trying to copy a key.
Because they can't open the car door.
Because they can't open the door until they get the key program.
That makes sense, you know.
It makes my job a little more difficult.
Right. Well, that's why they pay you the big bucks, bro. You know, come on. That's why, you know, you make the big bucks, you know. You drive the new vehicles every day. So what the heck?
Well, we try. Yeah. It's I'll tell you, they try and keep it secure.
Well, I'm glad that they do. And I think the normal people, are. I guess I call myself normal. Some other people might not. But, you know, we need that. You know, we don't need the access to some little sophistication guru that, go out there and get in our car and drive off with it.
Exactly.
You know, so, yeah, I don't have a problem with that at all.
It's not like the old days where you didn't have to worry about leaving your key in the car so somebody could drive it off.
No, yeah. Exactly. You know, if you had a screwdriver and a big pair of pliers, then you could bust it out and short it out and drive with a screwdriver or whatever, you know.
Yeah. We do have a caller online. Caller, you with us?
Hello, go ahead.
Yeah, you're on there.
Okay, I have a 2005 GMC pickup truck.
Okay.
It's worked great for years, but the key fob, I had one key fob go bad, and the other one worked, and all of a sudden the key fob that I hadn't been using started not working. Does the base of the truck or the part that receives the part of the, not the key fob, but the other end, do they go bad?
Well, they can, and you do have a receiver module. It's a little radio receiver that's in the vehicle that is picking up that signal and then sending information to a body body control module, you know, to unlock or lock the vehicle or chirp the horn or whatever you're trying to do. So it's there's multiple pieces involved. The most likely cause is going to be the fob, and now there's testers that you can use to check the fob, and if the fob is good, then you have to go in and start checking the receiver, you know.
But this is all done at a dealership.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, it's and you know, as far as checking the fob, if you got one, you can come by, and I'm sure everybody will do it. You know, our parts department keeps the fob tester, on their counter back there, where if you come in and say, hey, can you mind checking this thing, see if it works, you know? They can put it on the fob tester and check it and tell you whether the fob is actually sending a signal out.
That's great.
So, yeah. Okay.
All right, very good. I appreciate it.
All right, appreciate you calling in.
That's cool.
One other thing that I found out, Kevin, is that when we got a new battery in, I was thinking maybe they have to reprogram the fob, but apparently not.
No,
just change the battery out.
Usually it has already learned and stored that information, and changing the battery doesn't change that information. So just putting a new battery in it usually just gets it to going again.
That being said, when you change that battery out and you totally pull all the juice off of that car when you disconnect the battery and hook back to the new battery, how much has to be reprogrammed? How much has to be reset?
A lot of times, nothing. You know,
really?
They've changed. There's more capacitors.
Back in the day, man, you had to reprogram the radio and all kind of stuff.
It was everything at one point. Now, like stuff on our vehicles. You know, if I unhooked a battery on my truck out here and leave it sitting for 5 or 10 minutes and then hook it back up, I'm gonna have to roll the windows down and back up so it can learn their minimum maximum position. I might have to reset the clock, but usually it'll go back to its own. It will still remember my radio stations.
Oh, well, they've got that fixed now, huh?
Now, you have all your buttons on 106.5, right?
Oh, of course. Okay. Yeah, of course, yeah. But it's so it remembers that that's the only thing I listen to.
Well, we'll overlook the one on Sirius where you got all of the NASCAR.
I do have it on that one.
There's a surprise, Tom.
Yeah. I got to keep up with that stuff.
Sometimes. Oh, yeah. Well, a racer's going to listen to NASCAR, baby. You know, cut their boy.
Yeah. Yep, I know. You got to listen to your
I'm going to listen to it, too.
Yeah.
And I'm on, my TV's going to be on it when the race is on.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Let's see. We got a text message here. 2008 Cadillac Escalade sometimes will idle fine, then suddenly starts idling rough. It's really hard to say. You know, the most likely thing is going to be just the simple tune-up, stuff, either plugs or wires. A 2008, depending on which motor is in that one, I think it may have the active fuel management, which is the cylinder disabling system on it. It could have an issue there. More than likely not. It's probably going to be something along the lines of plugs and wires, that kind of stuff. I mean, we're talking about a 12-year-old vehicle now.
Oh, okay.
So that stuff
okay.
is starting to get its, time to do something with. Also, those particular motors also had issues with the intake gaskets at times would have a leak issue where they would actually pull air in. Normally that would set a lean code, not always, depending on how bad it is, and it may have to adjust for it. Usually the neat thing about these is if you get a very small vacuum leak, it can compensate for it, and you're just pulling extra air in, so it knows to put fuel for it and move on,
So it doesn't lean out and burn something.
Right, right. So it can adjust for small leaks, but you just have to, that's one of those things. Luckily with these cars that, as a technician, I can go in and I can look at parameters and see what's going on. I can look, see if it's actually a misfire. You didn't mention whether or not it was setting a check engine light or anything like that. Usually if it's a misfire, your check engine light's going to sit there and flash, and then it's going to leave the light on with a PO300 or 301 through 308, depending on which cylinder it is, misfire code. So you would have to, go look at that. But, being an 08 model, it's probably time to do an upper intake clean and all that. But just time.
You didn't
say
how many miles is on.
Yeah, just time for some basic maintenance. But it sounds like it's time for us to take a break and let you hear from our sponsors. And we'll be back after these.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
I think that was your cue.
I think it was. Welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along with Tom Claxton. Have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106.
All right, okay, my time. Question.
Yeah, Tom had a question, too. Okay.
My time. We were talking here a while ago about this gentleman with his 08 Escalade.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day when we used to do all these tune-ups and we'd change plug wires, distributor cap, rotor button, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And now we don't do that so much. We probably don't even raise our hood, most people, until they get to 100,000 miles or more.
Right.
That being said, so we bring our car in, say it's got 115,000 miles on it. It hasn't had anything done to it, oil change and, that kind of maintenance, maybe some air filters, whatever. Then what can we expect and what are we looking at? Are we just changing the plugs? Are there some – how about plug wires? How about coils, et cetera, et cetera? Like the top-end flush and all those. What should we be expecting – to do all that, it's kind of like, what do we accept from a dealership or a shop that's what we need to do? What is the basic things that we should be considering?
Well, at 100,000 miles, which is your first real major service, you know, you're looking at fluid changes. You're looking at, you know, plugs. We recommend plug wires. They don't, you know, the manufacturer really doesn't recommend the wires, but, you know.
They're not that much
you
now,
got
are
them
they?
Off. So yeah. There's really no labor involved, you know, so.
It's just the part that you would be buying, right?
At that point, and it's got 100,000 miles on the plug wires.
Right.
And that is one of the point, and one of the.
You got to consider those are
items that, that, you know,
those are a wear. They are a wear factor.
Right.
And they've got all that juice running through them now, even though they've got some great components that they're made out of.
Yeah.
What's the core? Oh, by the way, what's the core on a wire now? What is it made out of?
It's going to be a. It's a carbon core.
Okay.
You know, it's not a solid core wire. But they're, you know, they hold up extremely well, but, you know, it's like anything else, it will fail. And if you wait to the point to where it's really failed, then you might have to start buying
then
coils
you,
and
right,
stuff
then
like
you go,
that.
Then you go burn some a coil up or some coils.
Right, because you're overworking it. It's trying to send that spark through the inside of that wire, that even though it may be burnt up. And
it's going to keep throwing
it at
it.
A lot of times it'll get it there because these things are hot now.
Yeah.
The coils, they do a heck of a job.
Well, that's what you're saying, though. You've got a coil now on most of all vehicles. You've got a coil on each plug.
Right.
Or back in the older days, we had one coil for everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And now it's usually, I don't know of any vehicles that have, you know, one central coil anymore. Everything's got an individual per cylinder coil, or it may have like a group of coils put together in one component for you know, four cylinders or whatever. But most all of them are single coil per cylinder. Some of them even have two coils per cylinder, depending on if you have a dual plug engine like the Hemis on the Dodges.
Okay.
Some of their V8 motors are two plug cylinders.
Okay.
So it's going to have two.
Well, they do that for the hemispherical heads.
They're doing it for an emissions thing more than anything else,
okay.
Just to help burn.
It's not as power as much as it is emissions.
Right. Just they can time the burn better to where it kind of lingers longer. But like GM, they do it a little different way. They're carrying the spark out longer on ours instead of trying to spark two plugs, you know.
Okay, so you're putting a spark in there hot enough and long enough that it's going to burn the fuel that's in that combustion chamber.
Right. Just trying to get a complete burn. You know, because you'd be amazed how much fuel actually goes through a motor that does not get burned. That's the whole purpose for the catalytic converter and all that, is to capture and reburn on the to clean the exhaust up. The EGR is actually sitting there to reburn some fuel, plus lower the temperatures in the cylinders and that kind of stuff. But you know, it's
did we see much failure in the EGRs now, like we did earlier when we first started?
Honestly, we're getting away from EGR valves.
Oh, we are. Yeah. What are we doing now?
Well,
how are we going to do that?
We're doing that with the variable cam timing.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
So it's you can do the same thing. You're actually just holding the exhaust valve open longer to dilute the intake. Yeah.
To scavenge the cylinder.
Yeah. To help and actually just put a little exhaust back into the mix going into the intake side. If you hold it open just a little bit longer, it actually will, as it's drawing in the fuel,
it'll draw
in the intake,
it'll
draw some of the exhaust back in.
Right.
The same thing you're doing with EGR.
So you're burning it. You're burning the excess fuel that way,
right?
Rather than having an EGR,
right? And you're burning it that way. Plus, like I say, it actually lowers the NOx emissions, you know, in the exhaust system, which lowered, you know, basically you're lowering the temperature in the cylinder some,
right?
Yeah,
right.
Not letting it get out of hand and that. So a very good job of that.
So now we're going to change. We're going to always change the fluids,
right?
And we need to define fluids.
Well, you know,
not just your oil.
Not just your oil. You know, by that time it's time for a transmission service.
Okay.
You know, I think they will actually let you draw it out a little longer than that, but I don't really like going.
I wouldn't want to. No.
The rear end, they're kind of in the same boat. They'll let it go a little further.
Is that a viable deal now? Should we consider that?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Are we running synthetics in all the rear ends now?
We are running synthetics in pretty much everything.
Are they lighter weights? Back in the day, we ran 90 weight.
Well, it's a
what is it, 50-70, 50-70?
It's a 75-140, I think.
Okay, okay.
So it's a little lighter weight oil. It's a better oil, and it has the capacities of a 140 weight, but it's more along the lines of a 70 or 75
right.
weight
well,
oil.
Yeah, once it gets hot, it gets the viscosity of the fluids thicken.
Right, right. Or it doesn't thin as much, let's put it that way.
Okay.
It maintains its viscosity.
Well,
yeah,
that and the shear factor of the oil itself would be greater,
than
what we had back in the days when we just had a basic old mineral oil.
Yeah,
you know,
and that's something that we don't have near as much trouble out of anymore.
You don't hear anybody tearing up a rear end anymore.
Yeah, the you know, every once in a while something happens. You know,
it's rare though.
It's rare. It's usually because something was not set up right from the factory. Mm-hmm. You know, the pattern was not correct from day one, and it just took a while to, you know, for it to be a problem. But
all right, so we got fluids, rear end, transmission,
yeah,
and oil, and, you know, basic oil, and then what about
your filters?
And filters. Now, what about we're seeing a lot of brake fluids being changed now. We didn't used to see a lot of that.
Yep. And it depends on the vehicle. About every 2 years, they're recommending a brake fluid flush on a lot of the brake systems.
You might explain that to our listeners about, you know, back in the day, we never flushed that stuff out unless
you waited for something to spring a leak or rust fail, and then you repaired it. And while you were repairing it, you had to bleed it out, so you basically flushed it.
Okay,
you know.
But now we do something different.
Yeah, you know, and a lot of these components nowadays are way more expensive. You know, when you get into a brake modulator valve for your analog system, you may be getting into a $2,500 bill.
Say what?
So you might want to spend.
I'm going to change fluids in that dude, man,
or change cars.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. You might want to spend a little money maintaining the system before it's an issue.
Don't we also have just about everything that's on there is aluminum?
Most all of our components are aluminum components.
Right, in the old days, they were cast iron and steel.
Yeah. Most of our brake calipers, most of our, you know, the modulator valve is mostly aluminum. Mass cylinders are aluminum.
So what
they
happened?
They do a very good job.
They do. You know? They do, but it's a lot lighter. But then, that being said, what happens between fluids if you're in a cast steel component versus an aluminum component?
Well, the thing is you don't get that rust factor built up in the cast component, in the aluminum components, like you do a cast,
right?
Because brake fluid is pretty corrosive, you know, when it comes to it. You know, has to have air to make it be that way. Mm-hmm. But
hydroscopic,
but it is, and moisture. It's and that's the key word for brake fluid is it's hydroscopic, which means that it will attract moisture,
right,
and absorb moisture.
Okay,
you know.
So what we're saying is if you've got all those aluminum components, we might have more heat.
Well, it dissipates heat better.
Okay.
But you still have,
we're still gonna
have
get
a lot
water.
Of heat there.
We're going to get water.
You can still get moisture in the systems. So you should never see it. You know?
Right.
And we're talking about a microscopic, you know, level here. But, you know, it is enough to cause an issue. And there are indicator strips that you can use to check, you know, for that.
Okay, that being said, we need to do that. We need to, if we're going to do 100,000 miles, we need to go ahead and change that all brake fluids out.
Right.
All right, what about like power steering?
Typically, power steering, we do have a system to flush power steering, and it's more for when we have a failure in the power steering system and need to flush out the metal.
So normally now we don't need to change that?
Not as much. I mean, there are sometimes you'll want to do that if you've got one that's been taxed pretty hard. But most of our vehicles now have an electric power steering system on them.
That's neat.
We don't have fluid in them.
That's awesome.
Belt driven.
Well, they've got away from all that.
Yeah. So it's they've gotten away from a lot of that.
Well, you know what? I'm bringing this up because I know a lot of people take their vehicles into some of these quickie shops,
mm-hmm.
and you next thing you know, a guy walks in there, and you got you need to change the brake fluid, we need to change power steering fluid, we need to change this, we need to change that. And the next thing you know, you got $800 to $1,000 worth of need tos.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So that's the reason I was trying to define this for our listeners, as to whether or not that's something that they need to even consider.
Well, and that's one of the things that we try and do, and always we can do a better job of it, but we try and give you a good inspection every time you come in for a service. We try and give you a warning ahead of time to where you can budget for,
right,
you know,
right.
And we'll also prioritize the things that you need to do now versus mm-hmm. things that you can wait a little while.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's all part of, you know, why you really ought to bring your car to the same place every time to get right. serviced, preferably to us at UJ. But, you know, bring it to us, let us inspect it, and keep up with the wear items as they wear out, and then we can, you know, not surprise you quite as much.
Right.
Anyway, we're going to take a break and let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back.
Tiny's got a gold watch. Don't seem like a whole lot. After 30 years of driving up and down the interstate. But Charlie's had a good life. And Charlie's got a good wife. And after tonight, she'll no longer be counting the days. 18 wheels and a dozen roses, 10 more miles on his 4-day run, a few more songs from the all-night radio, then he'll spend the rest of his life with the one that he loves.
It's the Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Show. This is the Car Doctor, Kevin Raywinkle, along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. And speaking of text, let's get answer a couple questions here. Back on the Escalade. Sometimes it'll be fine, and suddenly it'll start idling rough. Then about 30 seconds later, it seems to sort out some sort of sensor kicks in. And runs fine again. Then about another minute later, it runs rough again. When it does this, it also turns on the service Stabilitrack light. You know, the Stabilitrack system is tied to the ECM on these things, the engine control module. And if it sees a misfire, it will turn on the Stabilitrack light. But you can also have a throttle gas pedal or throttle blade for the throttle body, an issue with that, and it will turn on the Stabilitrack system light because it doesn't know, it's not sure that it can control the throttle properly, so it may put this thing in reduced power mode, which may be your rough idle, you know. So it's something we need to get it in the shop and find out what code's in it, because I guarantee you if it's got a service light on, it's going to have a code stored. And let's see, we also have Dave from Gulf Shores. I've heard rumors about electric GMC pickup, and when's it coming? I don't know about the GMC pickup, but I do know the Hummer name is coming back and will be sold through the GMC stores. And it is going to be a full electric vehicle. That's something that, and I was reading a little bit on General Motors. Don't know a real timeline on that. They usually start talking about it a little bit before. So I would imagine either later this year or first of next year. But they were talking about the new battery that GM has developed. It's not inside of a hard case.
Huh.
So it's actually what they call a soft-sided battery. which means that it can be formed to the car better.
Oh, okay.
And not take up as much room. Doesn't have to be built in weird configurations to...
The battery could conform to whatever contour that's available for it.
Right. And it can also be stacked on top of each other.
Really?
Instead of have to be side to side like plates, it can be stacked on top. So, you know, it gives them a lot more.
That's going to change a whole lot of, the electric cars, the trucks and everything else, because if they come up with that, or they have come up with that battery, then naturally mm-hmm. it's going to move over to all the other manufacturers and vehicles, and
right.
they're going to want to be able to do the same thing, because it's that solid case battery
mm-hmm.
makes it, you got to build a car around that, or vehicle around it.
Right, and it takes up a lot of key areas in the vehicle when it's like that. The soft battery will actually help things quite a bit. They say it's supposed to be a real competition for the Tesla battery, because the one thing that General Motors is, they're a car company that builds an electric car and battery. Tesla is a battery company that builds a car, okay? That being said, if we end up with as good or better battery technology, I promise you we can build a better car.
Oh, hell yeah.
And we can get it to market better, and we can service it better
right.
because we have the infrastructure to do so.
Well, you can buy a Tesla, that's a name.
Right, right. You know, hey, they've got a great car.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to take anything away from them. They've been real innovators in the electric car industry.
I think they hadn't got out of their experimental stage yet.
No, and it's new technology, and they're trying to be the leaders in that technology. More power to them. Someone's got to. You know, everybody's headed that way. I think.
I bet you they haven't built a million or 2 or 3 million of them like GM has.
No. I think GM got a beat on how many cars they can get out if
right,
they need to.
Right.
So it's
everybody's
getting on board with electric vehicles.
The more they produce, the better the vehicles are. So
yeah, absolutely.
You can find that many more bugs that you get out of them now.
Yeah. So
what did he say something about Rain-X on there?
This was actually that's some old stuff we were talking about.
Oh, okay,
that's
we did that the other day.
We talked about. With Dave, that's his old conversations.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, but today that was his comment today. But we do have a lot of new exciting stuff coming with the GM car line. The electrics are part of it. The new Corvette's part of it. They've been releasing more and more about it.
A lot of information out about that mid-engine car, man. It's unbelievable.
Our sales manager just got back from Vegas for a 3 or 4 day deal out there, playing with them, hands-on, talking about them in classrooms and at the track and doing stuff. And I tell you, it is a very special vehicle.
Awesome.
Yeah, they can do some incredible things. They have some really, really nice innovations with them. And this configuration is really not even the hottest one that they're going to have.
Whoa. You know,
they've got some bigger, better, badder,
oh my goodness.
Cars coming down the road. And,
you know,
this is more their baseline Corvette powertrain options. You know, of course, you can get different brakes and suspension and all that kind of stuff with it. But it's more along the same power plant design that we've had, for a little while with a different transmission and all.
Right.
But we've got some four-valve motors, coming down the pike.
We're going to get away from a lot of that over rock arm geometry with push rods.
Yeah, and it's General Motors is pretty much the last one to hold on to that technology because it's been so bulletproof.
Oh, man, yeah. Well, we're still racing it right now. We start racing it on the track.
Yeah, and it's hard to get away from because it makes power. It makes fuel economy. It's durable.
Right.
There's less maintenance involved.
Right.
Less
right.
things to go wrong. And it has not been even the race versions of them have not been at a disadvantage horsepower-wise to any of the other companies.
No, they've developed them where they can run them up there, you know, 10,000 RPMs, man. It's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
And actually 11,000 in some cases.
Oh, yeah. I mean, some of them are just, they're crazy what they're turning these things. But
well, shorter the strokes, more RPMs that they can turn them. You know, they've had some of those V8s that they built to run in Indianapolis that had, you know, like a 2.5-inch stroke rather than 3 or 3.5-inch stroke. And they could turn them 10,000, 11,000 RPMs, you know.
Well, some of those things, they were like the F1 cars, you know, they're little motors. They'd sit there and idle at like 6 or 7,000 RPM, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're 15, 16,000 RPM running
nothing,
them.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, it's and it you had to run them that hard just to get them to run,
right,
you know, at low speeds and take off and
make
that
horsepower.
But, you know, it's a lot of this technology is just really, really interesting to me. I mean, that's kind of what I get into. But you know, the car is going to be something special when it hits the market, and they've already delivered. They delivered Hendrick his car, so
there you
go. They are number one has hit the ground.
Number one is
so the rest
on
of them
the showroom floor at Hendrick Motorsports.
They're coming off the line
right
as we speak. I guarantee you.
Yep.
So. But it looks like we're coming up to the end of the show. I want to thank everybody for listening to the Car Doctor Show. You know, I'd appreciate some more phone calls, so you know I don't have to listen to Tom quite so much.
Oh, but, my Lord, yes. Tom's getting tired of talking.
I'm sure. I don't know if I'll
do that. But if there's anybody that's interested in me really coming unglued, they ought to listen Wednesday night from about 8:30 on to about 8:30 to 9 o'clock when I do my tirade.
There you go.
I recorded it today, and it's very interesting. And to all of our vets out there, a big old hoorah.
Come unglued, do you?
Yes, sir. Already on the fire line.
Been helping us along when the story's told. And the crowd is come and gone.